All right, good afternoon. How's everybody doing? Good. My name is George Willis, and I'm going to be giving you a talk that I'm very passionate about, which is everybody's here to learn about aortic dissection and how are we doing in terms of diagnosing that aortic dissection. So we're going to start off with a case. This is a case I actually just recently had about 5 days ago. I was working in the emergency department. 68-year-old male comes in with abdominal pain and back pain. Me and the resident went to see the patient. The patient said that he had had the acute onset of this back pain and abdominal pain that had been going on since 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was about 5 p.m. when we saw them. No other associated symptoms, no nausea, no vomiting, no urinary symptoms or anything of that sort. Just had a past medical history of hypertension and diabetes. And oh, by the way, doc, I forgot to take my blood pressure medicine today. So here he is. He didn't really look toxic in any way or anything like that, but he looked relatively uncomfortable. So his physical exam, he was afebrile, tachycardic, a little hypertensive, respiratory rate was 24. And obviously, now that you know that we're talking about aortic dissection, that blood pressure initially did not bother me. How many times have you seen a hypertensive patient come into the emergency department? Relatively frequently. His abdominal exam was pretty benign, was even non-tender on exam completely. Lab work just showed that his lactate was a little bit elevated. It was 3.4. And we got a repeat lactate after some fluids, and it went up to 5.8. Well, why is his lactate going up? Well, we gave him some pain control with morphine. Subsequently, he felt significantly improved. His vitals, as you can see, did improve slightly. Blood pressure is a little bit better, but not significantly so. And his heart rate is just a little bit better. So I started thinking to myself, what in the world do I need to do with this guy now? Here I have this guy who feels better after some pain control. Vitals look a little bit better. His lactate's going up a little bit, makes me a little bit uncomfortable, but he feels great and he actually wants to go home. But as typical for emergency physicians, we have to use the donut of truth. So we had to get a CAT scan. And lo and behold, his CAT scan did reveal an aortic dissection. Now, as most people would if they were to catch that CAT scan, out loud you would probably say to yourself, good job, George. You did a good job. You're a great doctor. But really what I was thinking in the back of my head was, crap. I really dodged a bullet on that one. And then I started thinking to myself even further, what have I sent home that may have been a potential aortic dissection? And what lawyers are out there to get me just because I missed one? So we're going to talk about aortic dissection. Are you missing this diagnosis? So my take-home pearls for today are as follows. One, do not forget aortic dissection on your differential diagnosis. You can't diagnose what you don't think about. Second, absence of classic does not necessarily mean you've ruled it out. So if they don't have classic symptoms, that doesn't mean that they don't have a dissection. Don't forget the other complaint. Do a risk factor analysis. Does the patient have any risk factors for developing a thoracic aortic dissection? And if they do, pursue it. Are there any lab tests to help with the diagnosis? And unfortunately, they're not. And then CT scan stable patients, do a transesophageal echocardiograph on unstable ones. So everybody knows the pathophysiology about and how an aortic dissection develops. You get an aortic tear into the intima, which subsequently goes into the media. And once it dissects into the media, you have two ways that it can go. It can either dissect back into the true lumen, or it can dissect out of the externa, causing rupture. You're probably not going to see those patients because they're going to die on the scene. Also, patients can have branch occlusion from the intimal flap. And this is typically what gives patients their symptoms above and below the diaphragm. So branches of the aorta can become occluded in one of three ways. Either the intimal flap will cover over the opening of the branch vessel, or the false lumen may dissect into the vessel, subsequently occluding the vessel. Or you may get what I call the sharpshooter effect, where the whole intimal flap dissects from away from the opening of the vessel. And in order to get blood through the vessel, it has to kind of shoot it through that little hole in order to get it to go in. But this is where patients get their symptoms. So the unfortunate thing about aortic dissection is that it oftentimes is this elusive thing in the night that you can't really diagnose. It is common, but not relatively common. It is the most common aortic disaster. It's much more common than a AAA. And the mortality is unfortunately very high. 1% it increases every hour that you don't make the diagnosis. So it's something that we need to be vigilant about. The unfortunate thing is that 20% of patients who have an aortic dissection present atypically, and 30% of patients present on autopsy tables. So we're not doing a really good job at diagnosing. So why is it so difficult? Most commonly is because people don't actually think about the diagnosis. So because the disease is so rare, they omit the diagnosis from their differential. Or they think about more common disease. How many people in here saw a patient with chest pain in the last week? Just about everybody? How many people saw an aortic dissection in the last week? Not as many people are raising their hand. So they start to think about ACS, PE, pneumonia, but nobody really thinks about aortic dissection. The lack of the classic presentation. Well, they came in with chest pain, but they didn't really have hypertension, pulse deficit, so I ruled it out just based off of that. And what we'll find a little bit later is that that's actually a really bad practice. And then there's no quick screening test that you can do. The unfortunate thing about making the diagnosis of an aortic dissection is that you oftentimes have to subject them to the donut of truth. Well, if you're scared to do the donut of truth for whatever reason, maybe they have a little bit of kidney dysfunction, maybe they've had 17 CAT scans in the last month and you're scared you're going to give them cancer, you may be hesitant to give them a CT scan. But because there's no quick screening test, you just throw out the diagnosis and say, I don't think you have an aortic dissection, so I'm just going to leave it out. Not a good practice either. Also, there's confounders that certainly may muddy the picture. So, patient comes in with classic ACS symptoms. I've got this crushing substernal chest pain, radiates to both arms, I'm nauseous, I'm vomiting, I'm diaphoretic. And we think, this person's clearly having ACS, so let's get an EKG, some cardiac troponins, and admit them to the hospital. Subsequently, a week later, they get a CT scan, and they're found to have a dissection. Also, the physical exam. So a patient comes in with stroke-like symptoms. Doc, I had this chest pain earlier, but now my right side is completely weak. So we start going down the diagnosis of stroke, CT head. It's normal. We give them TPA. Not necessarily the best thing. Diagnostics may lead down the pathway, as well as therapeutics. So a patient comes in with chest pain, you give them some nitroglycerin, their blood pressure goes down, that shear effect is relieved, and the patient actually feels better. And you think it to yourself, well, they had chest pain, they got better with nitroglycerin, so clearly they're having ACS, so let's get troponins and an EKG and admit them to the hospital. Subsequently, they develop a dissection and die. Also, you fail to acknowledge the other complaint. And this is actually one that's very typical. Branch occlusions typically have more than one symptom. So how many people have seen a patient with multiple complaints? What do you do with those patients? You typically put them to the back, let your colleagues go see that person, right? But they often focus on the main complaint. Okay, you have chest pain and you have leg pain. So let's focus on your chest pain. But doc, I also had this really terrible leg pain. I don't really care about your leg pain. I just care about your chest pain right now. So let's focus on that. And the problem is that when you think that the lesser complaint is less important, you often disregard it. And I've actually seen some people create diagnoses to explain your symptoms. So doc, I have this chest pain and you think I'm having a heart attack. Well, what about this leg pain that I'm having? Oh, you probably just pulled a muscle. Or you had such bad cardiac chest pain that you then tripped and fell and injured your thigh, and that's why you have leg pain, which is also unfortunate. So these are the tools at your disposal. History and physical is the key. But is it? So here's the classic presentation for an aortic dissection. Acute, severe chest pain, hypertension, and pulse deficits. All right, so patients have this, you're done. Get them an aortic imaging study with a CT scan and get them admitted to the hospital. Unfortunately, these actually aren't that common. So this is data from the International Registry of Aortic Dissection. And they actually determined that chest and back pain is common in about 85%, which is good. But then they said any severe pain, abdominal pain, chest pain, back pain, leg pain, is only present in 90%. That means there's 10% of patients who actually present painless, which should scare you. Acute onset's very typical, but the presence of hypertension is only present in 49% of patients. That's not a very high number. And pulse deficits is even worse. 27% of patients will have a pulse deficit. So does that mean that these people don't have a dissection? Absolutely not. So let's start off talking about chest pain. So what if they come in with these very atypical symptoms of chest pain? So that, again, they have the crushing substernal chest pain, and they have a STEMI. What do you do? Well, everybody in this room would call a cath lab, get that patient upstairs to get a catheterization. However, remember that the intimal flap can cover the coronary vessels and occlude them, causing ST elevation, typically in the inferior strain, in the inferior pattern. So you remember in patients who are young, may have aortic disease, or may have connective tissue disorders, if they come in with classic ST elevation symptoms for an ACS, think about the possibility of an aortic dissection. Tamponade. Patients come in with tamponade. You're thinking, why do they have tamponade? Maybe they have pericarditis or something to that effect, but maybe they have an aortic dissection. So you should always consider that as well. And then patients, again, can come in painless. They have no chest pain whatsoever, or their chest pain resolved with nitroglycerin, as we discussed before. So it can happen. Hypertension, common? No. 49% of patients have hypertension, but the other 51% don't. Why? Well, patients who come in with normal tension and hypotension can have tamponade going on. They also can have aortic insufficiency. And this is typically from the flap going through the aortic valve, causing aortic insufficiency. And then they may come in frank rupture. So these will not give you your typical hypertension that you typically see with aortic dissection. So the absence of classic means nothing. The aorta is this ticking time bomb that's waiting to blow up, and if you're not vigilant about making the diagnosis, you're going to miss it. Other complaints that may occur often are related to the branch occlusions from the intimal flap. So, abdominal pain typically is an occlusion of the mesenteric arteries. Neurologic symptoms, which is present in up to 30% of patients who come in with an aortic dissection, usually is related to the carotids or the vertebral arteries getting occluded. ACS-like symptoms, as we've talked about before, as well as limb symptoms, the femorals and the iliacs can get occluded, giving patients pain, paresthesias, typical things that you would see with occluded vessels. Decreased urine output is something that patients may not actually realize, but you may see an elevation in their creatinine, which may make you think about the renal arteries, or persistent hypertension that's refractory to your treatment is another thing that makes you think that the renals may be occluded. Also think about other complications that may result. Syncope. So patients come in with syncope, they dissect into their pericardial sac, they tamponade, they hit the ground, gravity takes place, and they regain consciousness. Again, can be painless, happens in 10% of patients. So you have to think about syncope as a possible cause. How many of you have sent home a young, healthy person who came in with a syncopal episode and called it a vasovagal episode? A lot of us. But you have to consider the diagnosis of thoracic aortic dissection as well. Aortic murmur is typically present when you see aortic insufficiency. Hypotension can happen, as we discussed before, with aortic insufficiency, tamponade, and frank rupture. And then SVC syndrome can also occur. This occurs when the aorta widens, compresses the SVC, causing facial flushing, facial plethora, and edema, and causing symptoms consistent with SVC syndrome. Painless? Yes, we've talked about it before. So the key things that you should focus on the HPI are describing the chest pain. So chest pain is usually acute in onset, typically severe, and you get this pain above and below the diaphragm. If you see pain above and below the diaphragm, especially with a complaint, think about aortic dissection as your primary diagnosis. But don't be reassured by absence of the classic symptoms. If they don't have hypertension, that does not mean they don't have a dissection. It can be low or normal. And pulse deficits may be absent in these patients. And then also don't forget the other complaints. They may have chest pain, they may have leg pain, they may have chest pain, they may have right-sided weakness. Remember those when you're thinking about the diagnosis. So, risk factor analysis needs to be done on all patients who come in with possible aortic dissection. So these are the classic risk factors. Obviously, you'll see chest hypertension, hyperlipidemia, male gender. Typically doesn't happen very frequently in females, and typically it happens in our older population. However, there are a lot of uncommonly known risk factors that people don't often think about. How many people have seen a cocaine chest pain in their emergency department? Right? What do? You get a couple troponins and you send them home, right? Well, the problem with that is 37% of patients, 37% of patients who had an aortic dissection were found to actually use cocaine recreationally. So if you have a patient who uses cocaine recreationally and comes in with chest pain acute, don't just get a set of troponins or two or three and send them home. Think about the possibility of an aortic dissection, especially when they come in hypertensive. Pregnancy. Not a lot of people think about pregnancy. Now, the good thing about pregnancy, I guess you would say for some, the good thing for you, is that typically patients who are pregnant who develop an aortic dissection have Marfan syndrome. Whether it's undiagnosed or diagnosed is hard to say. But typically this will happen in the third trimester because of the increased circulating blood volume and hormonal changes that occur to the vasculature in the third trimester of pregnancy. And they typically present with painless syncope. So think about a hypertensive pregnant patient who comes to your emergency department with syncope. What do you do? Labor and delivery. That's what everybody does. But think about dissection in your differential diagnosis. Don't just send them upstairs because that's the last person you want to take care of your aortic dissection patient. Young age does not rule out aortic dissection. Connective tissue disorders, obviously Marfan, Ehlers-Danlos, are going to increase your risk for developing an aortic dissection. If they've had previous aortic instrumentation, if they've had an aortic valve replaced or some other instrumentation to their aortic valve, that puts them at risk for developing an aortic dissection. And then there's a small subset of patients who actually get exercise-induced aortic dissections. Typically happens with your weekend warriors. I haven't run for 10 years or since I played football. I have a little atherosclerosis in my aorta that's unknown to me. They go out and run a marathon or a 5K or a half marathon and develop this tearing substernal chest pain, may come in cardiac arrest. Aortic dissection should be on the forefront of your diagnosis. So, any patients who come in with risk factors for dissection, consider that diagnosis in your differential. Always think about it in cocaine users, and remember the third trimester pregnancy with syncope. Definitely think about aortic dissection. And then don't rule out dissection just because a patient is young. Remember that there are other possibilities. Lab studies. D-dimer. How many people like D-dimer for aortic dissection? There's a couple people in the room. Well, remember what the D-dimer does. The D-dimer gets released when there's clot formation somewhere in the body. Typically, when you have an aortic dissection, the intima tears, the blood goes into the media, and because of the kind of torturous pattern of the blood flow, you develop clot formation. So there are some studies that say that if the D-dimer is less than 500, then there's no chance that there can be a thoracic aortic dissection. However, this was a meta-analysis. They did another study where they actually did a prospective study where they looked at patients, and it was D-dimer negative in 18% of patients with a confirmed aortic dissection. So one in five patients had a negative D-dimer. Not really an acceptable miss rate in my eyes. So what causes them to have a negative D-dimer is typically that intimal tear, they will dissect back into the lumen, into the true lumen, or they'll have a chronic dissection. And so you can't use a negative D-dimer to rule out dissection. It's not a good test. There's some newer studies that looked at smooth muscle myosin heavy chains. So how many of you guys can order this in their emergency department? Nobody's raising their hand. It's promising, 90% sensitivity and 98% specificity. And this can actually differentiate an aortic dissection from acute coronary syndrome. However, these are small studies, and they have to come in within 12 hours because it rapidly declines after the initial onset. So they have to present within that first 12 hours. Studies are small, and again, it's a send-out lab, so it's not something that you're going to get back quickly in your emergency department. So as of this point, there are no screening labs to date to make the diagnosis of a thoracic aortic dissection. Lab testing is useful, though, especially in patients who have branch occlusion. So you should consider ordering these labs if a patient comes in with chest pain and abdominal pain. Think about the mesenteric arteries and order a lactate, which is what made the diagnosis for this gentleman who we got the CT scan for. Creatinine for renals, troponin for coronaries. Amylase is actually more specific than lipase if the celiac and the superior mesenteric artery are affected, and AST and ALT for the liver. Imaging studies. So everybody gets imaging, obviously. Let's talk about chest x-ray. How many people order chest x-ray to make or to rule out the diagnosis of aortic dissection? Nobody. Excellent. Not a good imaging modality. These are the typical things that you'll see on your chest x-ray: wide mediastinum, abnormal aortic contour, left pleural effusion, or tracheal shift. So if you see these things, it should increase your suspicion that a patient may have an aortic dissection. But 40% of patients who had an aortic dissection had no mediastinal widening. So 60% of those patients had normal CT or normal mediastinum. And 11 to 16% of patients had a normal chest x-ray with a confirmed aortic dissection. So, chest x-ray, no bueno. CT. CT is great. It's the gold standard. You'll typically see aortic irregularities, intimal flat. You may see a false lumen. And you may actually see some precursors to thoracic aortic dissection. So if they have an intramural hematoma, if they have an intramural ulcer, that should raise the suspicion that they may be on the way to developing an aortic dissection. And it should be somebody who should have their blood pressure monitored and 100% have good follow-up. You can send these patients home. Vascular surgeons typically won't interact on intramural hematomas or ulcers. But be vigilant with those patients. Also, you can see branch vessel occlusions. You may see organ hypoperfusion. And you may actually see an intimal flap in these vessels. So, CT scan. MRI, great sensitivity and specificity, not really something you want to send your critically ill patient to. Lengthy, costly, not readily available in most cases, and again, patient safety issues. So typically, I will use the MRI maybe only if a patient has a low suspicion. I'm not really sure for sure. They may have some kind of kidney disease or something to that effect. But typically, I'm going to use the CT scan, or if my CAT scanner is down, which happens as well. But typically, I'm going to use the CAT scanner to make the diagnosis. Echo. Two flavors of echo, TEE and TTE. Both evaluate really well for tamponade and aortic insufficiency in your hypotensive aortic dissections. So TEE is more commonly used, and it's higher sensitivity and specificity. And it can be utilized in unstable patients. So this is someone who comes in who's hypotensive. You're concerned about tamponade. You would get a TEE on this person. You wouldn't send this person to the CAT scanner. It can be brought to the emergency department, but the problem is it's not readily available. You typically have to sedate the patient. You have to get the echo tech to come in, and I've called and gotten the echo tech to come in on multiple occasions, and it's very useful if they come in. But this is something that we can do. Transthoracic echocardiography is something that's doable by emergency physicians. Typically, you'll look at the aortic root with the parasternal long. You can look at the descending aorta. And you can also look at the aortic arch using a suprasternal view, which I'll show you in a second. Sensitivity is not that great, so it's not a good rule out, but it is specific. So if you see something, you can actually call your vascular surgeons and they'll typically interact on it. So how do you do a suprasternal view? You have to practice a bunch of times. So I actually practiced on myself. And this is my very beautiful aortic arch. As you can see here, this is my arch. This is my brachiocephalic artery. This is my carotid over here. And this is my subclavian artery on this side. And it's really, really easy to do. You just use your phased array probe or your curvilinear probe, put it right in your suprasternal notch, find your carotid, trace it down until you get to your aortic arch. And once you see it, you'll be able to see any luminal irregularities. It's what I used to help with this patient once his CAT scan came back, obviously. And as you can see, there's his intimal flap. So, echocardiography, I think, is great. TEE especially, but remember you can do something quick with transthoracic as well. Any questions before I go through the take-home points? So if you're suspicious and you're thinking about using x-ray, I would say no. If the history is suggestive, the chest x-ray should not help you make that diagnosis or rule out that diagnosis. So I would say if you're thinking about it, definitely go straight to the CAT scan. No. Oh, absolutely. Typically, we don't diagnose it because we're not thinking about it.
How do you then approach it if you consider it, if you're, you have to consider it all the time,
Correct. So that the goal of this was to make everybody think about it. Can you CT everybody? No, you can't CT everybody. But if you're having a high enough suspicion, you should CT image every. You should CT image the people that you're really suspicious for. So take-home points: don't forget thoracic aortic dissection on your differential. Absence of classic does not mean rule out. Don't forget the other complaint. Risk factor analysis. There are no lab tests to make the diagnosis. CT stable patients and TEE unstable ones. Thank you for your time.